Blog Talk Radio.
Things has held us down, but now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go, and where we'll end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're putting ourselves together, we're polishing up our act. And if you've ever been held down before, I know held down anymore.
Ain't no stopping us now.
What's happening, everybody? This is Wardell Parks, Junior for Soul Eye Records Radio. Much love to you, and God bless you on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon here in the United States of America. Much love to our brothers and sisters all over the world. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I apologize. I think that there was something wrong with the link, but I reposted the link, so you should be good. You should be good. You should be good. But anyway, oh man, I tell you, thanks, Greg. I know you're working over there to make sure everything's good. Hey guys, I'm so excited today because I have the brother who's played drums, who's playing drums on this song here in the background. He's coming on the show with us right after we get going here. I've got so many things happening. My page is just blowing up with everybody trying to communicate with me. Thank you guys for trying to make sure everything is good here on Soul Eye Records Radio, all the guys who work around the world to make sure our show is working properly. I appreciate you guys, but it's really overwhelming because everything's blowing up. But I just want to say that we have Mr. Keith Benson here on Soul Eye Records Radio, drummer extraordinaire, and I'm just so blessed because he has a story to share, and I'm excited. I talked to him earlier this week, and I was like, no, we got to save this for the radio, man. Let's keep it fresh, because we have like a very familiar history. I mean, we have some things in common, and this guy has been inside. He played drums on this song right here, and this song right here is in my soul, because I grew up in the city of Philadelphia. It's a part of who I am. And so that's why I'm so excited to have Keith on today. But just want to give a shout out to all the listeners around the world. Thank you guys so much for tuning in and hanging out with us. And I also want to give a shout out to all the people that followed me while I was traveling around the United States for 10 days on the road, just going from state to state to state to state. And that was fun for me. And it was great for me to see some amazing family members. And I want to say that that's the best road trip I've ever done. And if you haven't done a family road trip where you just go and see your family, it's amazing. You should do it. It's worth the investment. Your heart will be filled and you will be blessed. And you will bless your family members. So if you get a chance to do that, hit the road and get out there and see them. My uncles I hadn't seen in 40 years. That's ridiculous. So and my cousin's children, I didn't see them. I never seen them. I only saw them on Facebook, and I got to see them face to face, and they're like 23, 29, 20 this. And I'm like, man, all these years I've never seen them in person. So I got to hold on to them and just be blessed. So anyway, guys, I want to get to my interview. I'm so excited to get ready to bring on Mr. Keith Benson. Keith, are you there, my brother?
I'm here. Happy to be here with you.
Oh, man, it is so nice to have you, man. I am so blessed. Hey, man, God, you don't understand. When I was talking to you the first time I got to talk to you, because I've been looking for you for a long time, for years, looking for you. I kept on asking, okay, Who's that? Who's that playing drums on that? You know, and so, you know, no one could really tell me. And then the ones that did tell me didn't know how to get in touch with you. And, you know, so I was like, man, I because we lost so many people along the way. I was like, come on, I really want to talk to this guy. And finally, finally, I found you, and I'm so excited, man. I'm so happy to have you on the show today, and thank you for taking the time out and calling in, and I want you to share your story with us, man. But really, really quickly, before you share your story, I just have to tell you this, that song right there in the background, this song right here that you're playing drums on, that song... Mm-hmm. That song, man, I was in the studio recording for The Whispers. And so first I recorded Shalimar. And then the next week or the next few days later, then we went in the studio and recorded for The Whispers. And we were recording And the Beat Goes On. And when I was recording And the Beat Goes On, that was the first time I ever recorded a professional song for The Whispers. Wow. obviously the week before I did it for Shalimar, but that was the very first time for the Whispers. And all I could think about was this song, Ain't No Stopping Us Now. And I was just thinking, what would that guy do? What would he do? I was thinking about you. And I didn't even know you. And I was thinking, I wanted to get that pocket because that pocket felt so good. And still to this day, that pocket is just amazing. Everyone, I mean, that song had to have been played over a billion times probably. And are the drummer. You are the drummer on that song. That is
amazing.
That's
a blessing. That's
man.
A blessing.
Yes, Lord. But so anyway.
I
go ahead.
I was holding it down the East Coast. You was holding it down the West Coast. But Philly was in the house. Good, solid R&B soul music.
Absolutely. Philly is in the house. And, you know, and it's always been that way for me as a person who grew up in Philadelphia. You know, you guys penetrated my soul musically. Right. I became a drum. I wanted to be a professional drummer since when I turned 12 or 13.
Right.
And so as a little kid, I was always studying you guys. And so and you know, they play Philly International music more than they play anybody music in Philadelphia. I didn't know that at the time, but that's what I was consumed with, you know. And so anyway, tell people your story, man. First of all, how did you become a drummer? How did your whole music career start for you?
Well, it's a little embarrassing, but you know, you gotta take the good with the bad. It was literally 1964, and I'm at my house. I'm 10 years old, and I'm looking at a show called The Ed Sullivan Show, and the Beatles came on, and I had never seen anything like that, and neither had nobody else in the world, quite frankly. And I thought the drummer was cool, so I went and told my mother a big lie. I said, "Mom, you promised me a drum set for Christmas," and she bought it. She bought me a drum set, and the rest, as they say, turned out to be history. So that I started because trying to be like Ringo Starr. And a beautiful story on that is I was playing to show you how God has blessed and allowed my career to come full circle. I was playing in 2004, 2005, the Royal Festival Hall over in England. And Sir Paul McCartney was there, and his advance people came in and said, "Listen, Sir Paul doesn't always stay for the show. Don't be offended if he leaves early. Sir Paul doesn't take autographs, and Sir Paul does this and does that, and don't bother Sir Paul." We said, "Okay, fine. We know who he is. He's the reason I started." I was playing with Motown's Funk Brother. I was the drummer. By halftime, we had an intermission. Sir Paul was down in our dressing room asking for our autograph, and I got that on tape because I know nobody would believe me. So in my hotel room that night, I said, "You know, my career has come full circle. I don't have anything left to do in this business because the guy that got me started came and asked for my autograph." So that's a funny story, and I treasure that. And I have that video because I keep it because I don't believe it myself. So I've been blessed, and so have you.
Absolutely. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, I think we're from the city of brotherly love, and like John Coltrane and like Pearl Bailey, we're just sharing that love with the whole world, and the world needs love. So you and I have both been blessed to be able to do that and make some kind of mark in it. And I think the most what I'm most proud of is I know the Phillies used it for a fight song when they won the World Series. But it was 2008 when I heard Barack Obama use it as a theme song right before he came out and accepted his nomination in Denver. And I was out there for that event. And I had no idea they were going to use that song. And that was literally the first time I ever told anybody. I would hear myself on the radio quite often. But that was the first time I ever said, "That's me playing the drums." Of course, nobody believed me. They all ignored me. But I didn't care.
Oh.
I was so excited. We've been blessed. You and I have both been blessed, and hopefully the people we're talking to are also blessed, and we just keep it moving. That's all.
Now you got this is so crazy because you and I have a lot of things in common, and this is another thing you just told me about Barack Obama. Barack Obama used our song. Well, I shouldn't say our song, but it's the song I played.
It's your song. You played it. Your song.
The second time around, when he won the when he won it for the second time, and
that he used mine for the first one, and he used yours for the second one.
Exactly.
Oh, that's great, man. Come on. We got to meet and hook up.
We got to get together, man. This is so cool. And listen, I just want you guys to know that we didn't know this before this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Right,
We are just discovering, because I remember when we were talking earlier, I was like, oh, I can't talk to you no more. I want to save this for the radio because, you know, it's so good. It's so real. And there was something else you told me about the first time you ever played drums, and it was the biggest hit for Philly International, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that,
single,
or for the artist.
The first time I ever went to the studio, it turned out to be Teddy Pendergrass, PRI's biggest artist. And it was his first session as a solo artist. So he had done work with Harold Melvin. His first session as a solo artist was a song called The More I Get, The More I Want. I had never seen a studio. And the first time I was ever inside of a studio was my buddy Victor Krustarfin, who wrote Wake Up Everybody, who wrote Bad Luck, who wrote a whole lot of big hits over there. He's the one that pulled me out of Howard University. I was trying to go to Howard University and be an academic. But he was doing so well, making a lot of money and living a fun life. He convinced me to come out of Howard to start making records, which I did. And the first time I'd ever even been inside a studio turned out to be Teddy Pendergrass, that I had, which turned out to be Phil Evans Nashville's biggest single, because Ain't No Stopping Now is the biggest single. And, of course, Teddy Pendergrass is their biggest artist. So, again, it's just been a blessing, man. It's been a wild ride, and we're still on it. We're still riding, and we're still looking to bless other people, because that's what it's about at the end of the day.
And so for me, the first song that I did for Solar was Second Time Around, which was the biggest record, right?
Right.
That was their first gold, and then it went platinum. And it just, so we both have, once again, those similar firsts for record companies and the artists, because also Howard Hewitt had joined Shalimar on this record the second time around. Because the album before was Take That to the Bank record. He wasn't the lead singer then, but when the lead singer quit, Howard got the gig and he joined Shalimar at the same time, and I started recording for them. And so we feel like we joined the group together. And
well,
maybe you
need to do a record.
There you go. Oh, man. Well, I have it up here, right? Drummer to drummer. That's what I got written up here on the thing.
All right, man.
So I just got to say, I have a question for you from overseas, and it says, Ain't No Stopping Us Now became known as the new black national anthem. What is it about that song that give it that honor?
It's just such a happy, uplifting, and positive song. It speaks to our experience in a lot of ways. There have been obviously historic efforts to control our growth and to keep us from growing, to keep us from having equality. And so it just came out at the right time, and the message was the right message, and it resonated. So happy to have that honor, but Lift Every Voice and Sing is still the one. Even though people are talking about Lift Every Chair and Swing, but Lift Every Voice and Sing is still the one. That Alabama cricket that everybody's talking about, a new anthem is Lift Every Chair and Swing, because of the Seaport at the Alabama with the
That was shit. Crazy.
But it's not. That, it still ain't No Stoppers. It ain't Lift Every Chair and Swing. Lift Every Voice and Sing is still the one. So I'm happy to be talked about in that vein, though.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, to be a part of that, that legacy is just. Mm-hmm. And so did you ever get to meet the brothers that you recorded for, McFadden and Whitehead?
Of course. I mean, I worked with them for 3 years, and they would not do a session if I wasn't in town. So if I was out of town doing something else and they had a session schedule, they would cancel the session. until I got back to town. But yeah, I mean, I was the only drummer they used for a long time, for almost 3 years. So forth.
Wow, you were their guy. You're the guy. So tell us something about them. I never had the pleasure, the opportunity to meet them, and it's too late now. But is there anything that you could share about them as artists?
Insanely talented. John Whitehead was frenetic with his energy. John Whitehead could sing the New York phone book and make you think you were listening to a compelling concert. And quite often, John, when he would sing, of course, Vic Carstone played piano, John Whitehead and Gene McFadden did the lyrics. But John would always demonstrate the songs to the artist. When John would demonstrate it, it would be so amazing that when the artist would actually record it, and I'm not going to say the name of any artist because I don't want to do my question at me, it would always be like, wow, John did it better. But it didn't matter. They still got hits with it. But no, they were wildly talented individuals. And John was literally a force of nature. But both of them were very talented. And it was a lot of fun to work with. Fun marked the spot. And if fun has a sound. And the reason so many of those songs were successful were because, unlike sessions I would do in New York, which were strictly business and by the clock and by the watch, and you could feel that sterility in the song. You could feel all the guy did was play the notes, but there's nothing in them. Philly had a situation where we just had a good time. We didn't worry about the clock. We would get in there and we would do it when we felt it. And it kept the atmosphere good and really positive. It was like a whole other world with all different races of people, literally African-Americans, white, Asians, Latinos, everything. And none of that mattered. Nobody even registered. We just would have a good time. We would make good music. And apparently the rest of the world was able to feel it. And it was a great time that I believe is going to come back. I really believe it's going to come back. This sterile computer stuff where the subject matter is degradation, I think has played itself out. It had to be here to let people know how devastating it was, but now that it has played itself out, I see the young people and a lot of people going back to soul music with a message and music with a heart and music with dignity and love for one another. I feel that coming back. So I'm
optimistic. Wow. Wow, that's awesome, man. You when did you said you were going to Harvard University? Were you going to be an attorney?
No, were you going to... I'm a senior fellow. You spend 2 years, and I was in a fellowship called the Advanced Leadership Initiative that Harvard Business School sponsors, and it's the only fellowship that they have where we're able to study at any of the 12 graduate schools that they have, whether it be Harvard Law School, Harvard Business School, which I did both of them, Harvard Divinity School, which I took classes there too, Harvard Kennedy School, Chan School of, and all the various schools they have, we're able to go and study at. And my program was a 2-year program. And I had done so many things in the music business, I was exhausted of that, and, records weren't selling anymore. And I got that opportunity, so I took it, and it was one of the greatest opportunities of my life. And that's where I met Cornel West and other great luminaries from Harvard, a lot of good people. And just trying to use that blessing, to try to figure out how to bless other people with that blessing too, which is, what we do,
Right. Amen to that.
You had a good time there.
So were you from North Philly, South Philly, West Philly?
Do you want to know the truth?
You
want to know the real truth? I'm from Camden, New Jersey. Leon Huff is from Camden, New Jersey. As my sister Carla Benson, all the background singers, Carla Benson, Barbara Ingram, and Yvette Benton are from Camden, New Jersey. As the bass player, Jimmy Williams is from Camden, New Jersey. As Big Cross Star from Camden, New Jersey. As the sound of Philadelphia is equally as much the sound of Camden as it is the sound of Philadelphia, but we're so close we figure why quibble over small points. But I'm actually from Camden, New Jersey. I'm talking from Camden, New Jersey right now.
So you guys are the sound of Philadelphia, right? That's the name of your group?
No, we're MFSB now. Kenny Gamble, Leon Huff allowed me to take that name and move on with it. And after a long hiatus, we resurfaced at Harvard University at Memorial Hall, because Memorial Hall is a hallowed hall, because that's where Martin Luther King spoke, Malcolm X spoke, Franklin Roosevelt spoke, Winston Churchill spoke, and on April 15th of this year, MFSB and Cornell West spoke. And we're spreading that message of love and optimism and what we've got to do to get to the next level and bring everybody with us. And we were able to do it. We had three standing ovations. It was a wonderful thing. We plan to do more. And we're putting up a website. It'll be ready in about 2 weeks. It's at mfsb.info, not com, not org, mfsb.info. And we're putting that, we're constructing that website now. And we'll be out in full force around the holidays. Spreading that soul, spreading that classic soul or organic music. And we want people to know the difference between organic music and synthetic music. You know, synthetic music is okay, but organic music is good for the soul and the spirit.
Wow. Man, oh, man. So when is the record going to be released?
We hadn't started on the record. We're waiting on you for that one. You know, we're gonna work on that situation. But the website will be opened up in about middle of September. That's mfsb.info in the middle of September.
So you play with Archie Bell and the Drells too?
Of course, yeah.
Oh,
that's a lot of people, man. Even working on the Secret Life of Plants with Stevie Wonder. Yes, the Four Tops.
Your microphone got a little muffled.
So we work with a lot of people, man. You know, back in the day, it'd probably be easier to say who we didn't work with than who we did. We worked with so many. You know, Chaka Khan, you know, Gerald LaVert. I performed with Music Soul Child at the Apollo Theater. You know, so we had a blessed career. No problem with that. Again, I hope I don't sound like a broken record. I hope it don't bore you. To me, the challenge is how do we bless other people with our blessings? That's where I'm at right now, and that's where my people are at right now. And if you could help us figure that out, man, we got business together.
Amen, man. Well, I'm so excited, man, just to have you here. I've been like kind of really, you know, feeling like, you know, these anxieties because I couldn't wait to get you on to talk to you. And then I just talked to you earlier and found out you and I are close to the same age. I was like, man, I thought he was my uncle. My uncle. But we are right together. That, you know, he's just a couple of years older than me. But I am, right. Man, it's a blessing, you know, just to, you know, to be able to talk to a legend like yourself that, you know, you've been around the block for a long time. You've been a part of my life, you know, as far as, you know, and you were my teacher, not even knowing that you were my teacher, you know. And so that's why it's important that people that are out there, you know, that we pay attention, because somebody's listening, somebody's learning from you, whether it's good stuff you're doing or bad stuff you're doing, they're learning, you know. And so I appreciate you, you know, doing the right thing. You want to tell me a little bit about this song that I want to play another song of yours. Mm-hmm. I think it's a Teddy Pendergrass song.
Okay.
Let me see if I can bring this up here. And you said that you had a little story behind that song. I think we kind of jumped on it a little bit already.
No problem. We'll make it work.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit already. Let me see here. What was that? What was that song? I gotta find that song here. But man, I just want to tell you, I have somebody that wants to say hello to you while I'm doing this here and getting this all this going. So give me a second. Area code 267. Who do we have?
This is Alfie the Pilot.
How you doing, man?
Man, I'm blessed to be on the scene.
Yo, me and Alfie got a session for tomorrow.
What?
So that's funny. Yeah, we have a session tomorrow.
Oh,
with,
wow.
Well, Alfie was my blessing to, you know, to get to you. So I am very, very excited about that, man. Thank you, Alfie, for, you know, making this happen. Because when he told me he knew who played drums, I was like, what, you do? I was like, is he still alive? I thought it was like an old man. Alfie, we are the same age almost. So, you know, I'm just so excited, man, and really appreciate, you know, appreciate that. Alfie, is there anything you'd like to say to Keith? And you,
well,
I know you
I
see
mean,
him all the time.
It's my pleasure to be able to be of service, you know, to help us all, you know what I mean? However, with capacity,
forward
and positivity.
Right, absolutely. You guys have been recording together for a long time, though, right?
It was way back. Way back.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Way back. Yep.
And Keith, how old were you when you started? Since you're only my age, a little bit older than me. I can't believe it.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I'll be 69 November 15th. So that qualifies me for uncle status. I'll take it. You know.
Uncle Keith's in the house.
These young people tickle me.
I know, because Alfie's way up there. And you would never know it, though. So
no, he looks just like us.
I know. Like, good black dog.
Matter of fact, looks better. Yeah. So.
Stop playing.
Well, he's taking care of himself. So, so did you ever like the other groups? I know you said that this is kind of crazy, but the other groups in Philly. Who else did you record with in Philly?
I recorded with the OJs, Lou Rawls.
Wow.
I mean, all of them. I never recorded with Harold Melvin and Blue Notes. And I never recorded. I don't think I recorded with Billy Paul, but I pretty much recorded with the rest of them. You know.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing, man. Oh man, that is my history, man. That is like when I look at my song list and I'm thinking, oh, Philly International, old school. I mean, you guys. That's it. That's all the names and stuff.
Well,
so
man, you was doing your thing out west too. We was listening to you too now. So I don't know what you're talking about. You know.
That's right. Come on now.
Yeah.
Billy was listening to you. We had our ears on you.
Yeah. Well,
had no idea you had your ears on us, but we had our ears on you. Looking at you, it's like, yo, look what's going on out west.
I'm a product of you guys. So
well, that's nice to know. I'm just finding that out. I can't wait to meet with you talking about Dick Griffey and the whole scene out there, because I was always wondered about that.
Oh, yeah, man. And Leon Silver is amazing. Who played bass on Ain't No Stopping Us Now? Because it seems like to me that Leon took that style and ran with it.
Jimmy Williams. And the story behind that song is when we walked in there, Victor Carstarvin had just left. So they had a guy named Jerry Cohen who hadn't really written the songs yet, and he was just trying to find his way. He was more or less just John and Gene keyboard player. And this is a funny story. It's almost ridiculous. And Jimmy said, I'm not being exploited anymore. I'm not playing one note unless they have a chart. And I, in my infinite wisdom, looked over to him in the session and said, Jimmy, do you really think Kenny and Leon are going to let these guys be artists? Just play. We're here. Let's just have a good time. So we slammed the track down off the top of our heads. John Whitehead walks in at 1:30, hears the track, his eyes light up, he hollers, whoa, ain't no stopping us now. That's how that song was born.
Oh, my God.
And anybody was at the session, from Dennis Harris or anybody else, knew, that's how that song was born, and that's how that session was born. And the funny part is it turned out to be Philadelphia National Records' biggest single of all time, and it was really just a blow-off from Jimmy Williams and that magic line he put up in there.
Wow.
That's how that song was born.
That song is amazing, man. It's just, it always lifts you up. And like, you know, the president used it just to, you know, because it was just so driven. It was so optimistic and, you know, positive. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, for me, anytime I hear it, no matter how I'm feeling, it makes me feel better. It's like,
well,
it's got that thing, man. And so that was beautiful. See, there was no click tracks back then.
That was just
right?
a blow off, literally just a blow off from the rhythm section.
And John Whitehead was,
I told you, was a magical artist. He was able to walk in when he said out of his mouth, because he said what he meant by Ain't No Stopping Us Now was he was worried that they might not get a hit because Vic wasn't with them and they weren't sure of what their future would be. But when he heard that track, he was like, whoa, ain't no stopping us now. With a track like that, they ain't no stopping us. But they were astute enough as writers to be able to turn it into an anthem that that was really, really effective and really, really impactful. You know, so it's funny, but it's true.
That's good. Hey, so here's another question from overseas. How important was it, was the orchestration and arrangements to the Philadelphia sound? And have you had any memories of working with Jack Faith and Larry Gold?
Yeah, of course. Absolutely.
Okay. Tell us about it.
Of course.
Tell us about it.
Well, Jack Faith was a remarkable engineer, and Larry Gold was a cellist and a good guy who opened the studio. He's just a good guy. And that's what I was talking about when I was telling you. We would all come together of all races and all faiths and all different, it was like the world stuffed in the studio, and we all just a good time, you know. But of course, the orchestration was the what do you call it? It was the secret sauce to the Philadelphia sound. The Philadelphia sound would have just been one more, you know, R&B sound without that ornate Philadelphia orchestration. Because half the people in Don Renato's band, because Don Renato would do the horn and string. Over half of them were people right from the Philadelphia Orchestra. So they would do a concert with Eugene Ormandy, whoever who would direct them, during the day and during the night come down with us and record a soul session. So, yeah, that was the secret sauce to the Philadelphia sound, or one of the secret sauce to the Philadelphia sound.
Oh, that is excellent, excellent. Wow, man. So why don't you tell me about this song? This is a Teddy Pendergrass song. I think there was a little story. I want to play it so people can get a idea of you know, just some of the other stuff that you played on. This here right here in the back. Tell me about that.
That's the first time I'd ever walked in a studio in my life. I had never been in a studio. I heard of studios, but I'd never been in one. And that was the very first time I'd ever walked in a studio in my life, coming right out of college. And it was Teddy's first recording.
Solo?
As a solo recording here after he left Harold Love and Blue Notes. And I remember Joe Tarzan recorded that for us. It was the first time I met Joe Tarzan. Didn't even know who he was. Of course, I found out, obviously, much very quickly after. But it was the first time I ever walked into, so that's always going to be a special song to me.
Oh, that's excellent. All right, so listen, we're gonna take a little small break and listen to this, and we'll be right back with our brother Keith Benson here on Soul Eye Records Radio. Alfie's in the house, y'all.
I want from you, baby.
Wow, man, oh, man, I just, oh, okay. So when you, this is the first recording, can you just tell us about your session? This is your first professional recording. Can you tell us how the sessions went? How did you guys start? Did you count it off? How did it go? How did, how did you feel?
I counted it off, but I literally, I was young, dumb, and you know what? I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea the import of what it was. I was just hanging out with my boy. I really didn't have the gravity of what was happening. Really never occurred to me, and I think that's why I was able to get through it, because I just treated it as one more day. We might as well be at the mall as far as I was concerned. You know what I'm saying? Only when I look back did I say, oh, wow, that was this. And hearing other people talk about how it impacted them, it was only much later that I even understood what was going on. So it was just hanging out with my boy. We would play in my – he moved in with me. The reason we got close was because he was homeless, and my mom agreed to take him in. So it was the crazy part about it, Brother Wardell. We're thinking we're helping him out. Well, right after hospital, we take him in to stay with us. I go to college. He ends up making these big records and getting Wake Up Everybody and Bad Luck and all the other big records. He ends up getting a reputation where he could do what he wants at the studio now. So what he did was, I guess his feeling was he was going to pay me back for looking him out. He said, Keith, you can make X amount of dollars with a whole lot of money. I ain't going to lie about it. I'm like, I had never heard of that kind of money. So I said, okay. So I slipped out of college, and I just went out to hang with him. To me, with just one more jam session in the living room. And I didn't know who Joe Tarz or anybody was, and I didn't see the horns and strings. I didn't know the artist. I'm just jamming with my boy. And by the time it came out as a finished polished record, I'm like, that's when I said, oh, my God, this was actually, and I got it from them. So it was just one more day at the house before.
Now, what instrument did he play?
Oh, he was a keyboard player. Remember Wake Up Everybody?
Right. Yes, yeah.
At the intro of Wake Up Everybody, where all that piano flowery, that's Vic playing, you know.
Okay.
But the Huff loved it. Him and Huff was both from Centerville in Camden. And Huff used to go and study piano with Vic's mom. Vic's mom was got a full scholarship to Juilliard in the 50s. She was a very dark-skinned black woman. You know, she had to be a prodigy. And she was really deep piano player. And Huff used to go and study piano at her house when Victor was a little baby. So I believe that's how Victor got in there, because him and Huff were pretty close. And then, of course, Victor got me in there, and that's how the whole thing got started.
Who played bass on that?
Jimmy Williams. I don't think I ever did a session of any import that Jimmy Williams wasn't my bass player, you know.
So is Jimmy Williams the same guy that played drums on Ain't No Stopping Us Now?
Played bass on Ain't No Stopping Us Now, yes. All the major Philadelphia National Records, Jimmy Williams, after Ronnie Baker left. Ronnie Baker left in 75. So from 75 to about 82, 83, 84, when they closed down, it was pretty much all Jimmy Williams. Well, they had a guy named Sugar Bear for a couple of years. So Sugar Bear did good work, too. He did You'll Never Find, and, you know, he did the Jacksons. You know, he did some really, really, really good work, but he only stayed about 2 or 3 years. And then Jimmy Williams came in. After that, he pretty much closed the place down.
Okay. What about, oh man, I forgot what I was going to say. Oh, now you know Fat Larry, right? Did he ever play drums on anything? Because didn't he get signed over at Philly International as well?
Not Philly International. He was a contemporary. Everybody knew who he was. Everybody was well-respected. You know, he had his power in his own right. But it wasn't Philly International. I forgot what company was.
WMOT.
Mm-hmm. He made his presence known, you know, him and his whole band. I think his band is still working, quite frankly.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Fat Larry's band still working.
Dang, that's wow, man, oh, man. So tell me a little bit about, let me ask you this question, another question. It's about Norman Harris. Did he have any influence over the sound of Philadelphia?
Oh, man, Norman Harris was the sound of Philadelphia. Jesus. When you say Norman Harris in Philly, now everybody, I'll tell you a little funny story. It's the secret, so don't tell nobody.
Okay.
Everybody in Philly, yeah, tell your audience the secret. Don't repeat it. Everybody,
don't tell anybody.
Philly, right. They'll kick you back out. Everybody got a story of that's good, the story that's bad about everybody. I don't care who they are, except one person. Norman Harris is loved by everybody. As a matter of fact, if I saw somebody said they had a problem with Norman Harris, I looked like they had three heads. First of all, Vic was the one that got me to Philly International Records, right? But until Norman Harris said Keith is the guy, I really wasn't the guy. I was just Vic buddy. You see what I'm saying?
I became the guy when
Norman said it. Norman, wow. Man, he was a force of nature. He did, and his musicality was ridiculous.
You say a force of nature?
He was a force of nature.
Oh, okay.
He was a musician's musician, and he was just one of the most beautiful human beings I've ever met in my life.
Wow. And tell me, because I don't know. Just tell me, for the people that know nothing about this human being, what exactly was he? A musician? What was he? He was a guitar player. Okay.
He was a guitar player, and I believe he could play the scale and make you cry. You know what I'm saying?
Oh.
He just had such a feeling in his guitar, his rhythm guitar player. You know, would you agree, Alfie? I mean, he just was a remarkable, warm guitar player. And as warm a guitar player was, he was even more warmer as a human being.
Yes, and also, he studied with Roland Chambers. Roland Chambers was his teacher, another stellar guitar player with MFSB.
Wow. And so you guys are speaking of him in past tense.
Yeah, he left us. Yeah.
And Roland as well.
Okay, and what? What else did you say, Alfie?
Oh, I was just going to jump in real quick about the Ain't No Stopping Us Now and about the More I Get. I was blessed to work with Teddy when Teddy left Harold and when he got his deal. And so that's one of the first songs we learned, the band, Teddy's band, The More I Get. I Don't Love You Anymore as well. And You Can't Hide From Yourself. But I was asked by Gene and John, McFadden, John Whitehead, to be their songwriting partner when Vic left. Mm. I was working with Teddy, and I made a decision to stay with Teddy because it was, you know, seemed more stable type thing, you know.
Mm.
So
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
it makes sense though. It makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know. That's there you go. We learn every day. something every day. And so I want to find out, this is another question from the listeners. They always have the best questions. What are the memories of Sigma Sound Studio, and what are the differences in the recording from the studio to another? What are the differences in the recording from the studio to another?
Other studios, yeah.
Yeah,
I get the question. I know what they're saying. What's the difference in Sigma and all the other studios that there were to work at?
Right.
Sigma was Sigma had a feeling of its own. Sigma literally had a sound of its own that no other studio had. There's two Sigmas. There's one on 12th Street and there's one on 309 Broad Street that was the home of Danny Gamble's office. But they were all owned and operated by Joe Tarzius. So they all had this certain feeling and this certain sound and this certain vibe, not only in the sound, but even in the feeling in your heart and in your body, you know. So I was always 1,000% relaxed. Like I said, doing sessions at Sigma was really not like doing a session. It's just like hanging out with the fellas. And, oh, yeah, it's almost like as comfortable as eating a dinner. You sit down, you have dinner, and you go home. That's the way the sessions were. Other studios, particularly New York, you're always conscious of how fast you break the chart down, you know, how you don't make mistakes on the rundown because time is money. You know, it's very clinical, you know, in New York. So, and other studios like in L.A., they were like a balance in between. But Sigma had its own sound, its own feeling, and its own spirit, which I believe was captured in those records that we did.
Wow, that's awesome, man. And I think there was something else we were talking the other day, and I want to get this name in here. I know we have McFadden. I mean, not McFadden away here, but we have Tom Bell. Tell us about Tom Bell.
Well, never had the opportunity of working for Tom Bell, and I love Tom Bell. Again, Tom Bell was, you know, very, very beloved person. Not like Norman, we didn't have any detractors, but he was a very loved and very respected person. He always treated me well. He used to call me Baby Boo because I was Carla Benson's baby brother. But Tommy Bell was that guy who he wrote everything down. He wrote your breath down on the chart. And he expected you to breathe when that chart said breathe. And I wasn't that kind of musician. I was the kind of musician, like, show me the piano chart, I'll figure out the rest. You know what I'm saying? So I probably wouldn't have worked that well with him anyway. But he was a great guy, respected guy. And he used Bob Babbitt on bass. And after Earl left, I don't know who Tommy Bell used on drums. I just remember Bob Babbitt was supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm not
all right.
But he was greatly respected. There was nothing phony about him. He got those hits the old-fashioned way. He earned them, and he knew what he was doing. And he was just a great musician, a great artist, and a great human being.
And what I understand, Tommy would get the full concept of everything he wanted in the session and have that all written out.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, he wrote out every lick, every smack, every tap, every rest. He wrote it out. He knew what he wanted. And you couldn't go there and BS him and fool him. You know, he was a serious musician. And I wasn't that technical. I wasn't that chart-reading guy. I was that feel guy, you know.
Wow. So, okay, so this is another group. Did you play with Poogee and them?
No, never got a chance to play with them. Alfie probably did. Yeah, I think Alfie did. I never got to see it.
Alfie recorded with the Delphonics.
I did all this with Poogee. But Randy of the Delphonics, we were in a social club when we were teenagers. Randy Kane of the Delphonics.
Oh man,
they were the team too. I mean, they were like royalty around the city. Like, they carried themselves with that majestic stature, shoulders back, head up. And everybody loved them. The ladies loved them. The guys wanted to be like them. So, you know, but they had left the scene by the time I got in. I didn't get in until 75, and they had left the scene by then. And I heard that the Stylistics did songs that were really written for the Delphonics, but there was some contractual beef, some ego beef, you know, so he ended up giving it to the stylistic. But they were legit though. They were well respected and they earned it. They were good group of people.
Okay, so last question that I want to ask you. This is from the listeners again. Backstabbers by the OJs.
Mm-hmm.
And both of y'all can answer this question. Backstabbers by the OJs has officially been given the title of number one to determine the sound of Philadelphia. What would you say about that?
I would say that there would be no sound of Philadelphia had Backstabbers not come out. Because I heard it on good orders. It's rumor, but you know how this business is. Most rumors are true. They don't tell you everything. The rumor has it that Columbia was getting ready to release Gamma and Huff, and then Backstabbers came out. And it was such a big record that they ended up signing them for 10 years. You know, so I know how important Backstabbers was to Philadelphia National Records. So for it to be number one is kind of poetic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That was Earl Younger. That was Earl and Ronnie Baker. That was the early days. That was 71. I didn't get on the scene until 75, 76.
Okay.
You know, so but Backstabbers pretty much saved the company from what I heard.
Okay. That Earl Young gets around, don't he? God,
he does. He did. He does. He set the template, and the smart people went in there and stayed in the template that he set.
Yeah.
And I stayed in the template that Earl Young set up. I have no problem with that reality.
Yeah. Amen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Amen. If it works, don't fix it, right? Yeah.
There you go. That's how we looked at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, oh, man. Guys, I got to tell you, man, this is such an amazing blessing for me. And they're saying, don't let him go. Don't let him go. But I want to ask you, like, if people wanted to follow you, what was that? What did you have a website that people could follow you to find out?
MFSB.info will be up in about 2 weeks, mid-September. So follow MFSB.info there. And we'll be putting up some things that are interesting and that we could get the party started again and include everybody. Well, MFSB is mother, father, sister, brother. That means everybody. That means your listeners, too. And so we're all a part of this. And we're looking forward to hearing from everybody in about 2 weeks when the website's up.
All right. Cool beans. And I'll touch base with you just to confirm, and then we'll post it here on our website as well, so people could support you guys and love to see you live, you know, performing live somewhere as well. So
that's going to happen soon. Yeah.
Excellent.
So Wardell, I want you to understand, Brother Wardell, this has been a pleasure and an honor to me. You are the best drummer of all time. Okay.
I told him this. He says, anything you wanted to say? I said, yeah, just say I'm the best drummer of all. And he said, you are crazy.
But had a good time, man. Thanks for calling us, man. Thanks for talking with us, and God bless you with everything you do.
Okay, I have to ask you a drummer's question.
Mm-hmm.
Drummer to drummer.
Mm-hmm.
What is your feeling about drum machines?
They have their place. They're just one more. In other words, music is a wide, 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 wide net with a lot of instruments and a lot of colors and a lot of things. They have their place. They cannot do what a live drummer does, and a live drummer can't do what they do. So it's not exclusively live. It's not exclusively machine. They have their place. And the creativity comes, Brother Wardell, in knowing what their place is and getting them in their place, so that they can do their best work and have the live drummers do their best work at that time. But there's a place for all of them.
Amen.
I agree.
Okay. I was going to ask you, so you agree with that. So, you know, playing with a drummer, you know, because, see, both Keith and I are the drummers, right? So, and you're a keyboard player, Alfie. So playing.
I would say this here. The keyboard is a drum. It's a melodic, harmonic, and percussive drum.
Yeah.
When it's played right.
It's a percussive instrument.
When it's played right.
Harmonic and melodic, when it's played correctly.
Yes. So Your preference is playing with a live drummer, or do you? You said you agree with him, so it has the drums. Drum machine has its place, or do you prefer to play? Like, because you do jazz, you do R&B, you do everything. So, do you have a preference?
Well, I mean, as Keith was saying, it has its place. So I program drum machines.
I've been doing it for
years. I do not try to do a gig where I'm relying on the drummer's machine to play along with. No. But I prefer to play with real people. But when I program drums, and I talked with Earl Young about this, he said the best person to program a drum machine is a drummer. So it's an art in that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll program drums similar to what the feel that I've heard drummers play in different instances. I don't try to just robotically just take some loops somebody put together and patterns and just put them together. No, I could build as, you know, like the stuff happened in the studio with real people kind of vibe. That's my spin on it.
Yeah, and I would add to that, first of all, I can't imagine a jazz gig being done with a drum machine because jazz is so interdependent on feelings in the moment. But sometimes, and R&B is often too, but sometimes, like the first drum machine that was successful was Marvin Gaye's Sexual Healing. I mean, in that situation, it worked. You see what I'm saying? But
and Juicy,
I don't know.
Juicy, and too many Juicy Fruit as well.
Yeah, that was afterward. I'm always mad at the first one.
First. Okay,
so Marvin was the first guy that first go. So, but that's fine. But I can't see Marvin doing a real gut bucket in your face concert using a drum machine as opposed to having a live drummer. That's why I said he had to play. So in the studio, you know, in a situation like that, fine, it works. But when he's going to see that person live, see that audience live and interact, he probably needs somebody that's going to interact with him.
Right.
That would be my guess.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, we have one more song to play as you are leaving, my brother. And right before I play that song, which is, let's see, which is a song by Michael Henderson, In the Nighttime, right? Before I play that, I have people are just sending messages, man. The Philly sound has been described as funk in a funk in a bowl tied with, I can't see. It was funk. It was described as funk in a bowl.
Well, it's silky.
What is that?
Silky,
what does that mean
is,
to you? What does
well,
that mean?
Philadelphia soul is sophisticated soul, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like a cool guy with a silk suit on. You know what I'm saying? It's soulful, but it's classy at the same time. It's classy soul.
Classy soul. Well, you know, overseas, that's what they call soul music, right? We kind of call it R&B. It just kind of what it seems like R&B has kind of lost its soul to me. I don't know what's really going on there with the different the music. It just seems to like they're trying to go back and grab some of the stuff that was laid down earlier that you guys did earlier, but now for some reason. It just seems like it just doesn't have the same.
That's a whole another hour long conversation, brother Ward. and we literally, we, you know, because
a lot that's of that, heavy, huh?
It is. A lot of it's intentional. That Martin Luther King said it was the music that helped and sustained the civil rights movement because our music was about love and unity, you know, between one another and between man and woman.
Right.
And a lot of people don't want that love and unity in our community. So they did other means to try to degrade it, and it's been working. But we're going to fix all that. No worries. Everything is everything, and it's all good.
All
we
right.
need another hour for that one. God bless you, man.
You Oh, God bless you, too. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this song, the Michael Henderson song, before we go?
I just gave you that to let to indicate that I had a pretty good career outside of Philadelphia International Records, and Michael Henderson, who made his bones playing with Miles Davis, came to Philly like Elton John did, and like David Bowie did. Like everybody was coming because Philly was hot, and he wanted to use me as a drummer, and it was a great honor. And we did a Million Seller Song with him too, and so we're just thankful about that. We're just thankful for everything, and trying to use our blessings to bless others. That's it, Brother Wardell. That's all.
Amen. Thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you both coming on, and may God bless you guys and keep you and keep doing your thing. And thanks for blessing and being a blessing to the music industry. We appreciate you. All right.
I'll see Alfie in the studio tomorrow.
Yeah. Videotape it.
Okay.
All right, guys. Take pictures.
All right.
Catch you later.
All right.
Tonight.
All right, we'll do. All right.
In the night time. cause I wanna be with you in the night.
Into spring. These are a few of my favorites.
Oh, this drummer wants to play that song so bad. Now we're talking. Let's go. Anyway, man, thanks so much to our special guest, Keith Benson, for coming on from the sound of Philadelphia. Man, one of the drummers, and we are so blessed to have him on. I can't believe he played on Ain't No Stopping Us Now. That song is an amazing theme song for so many of us. But anyway, God bless you, my brother. Thanks again, Keith. And I did send you the link just now. So, you know, and we look forward to when he puts out his website is up and stuff. We'll post it for you guys so you can go and check them out and stuff. And I'm just so excited. Good gracious. Anyway, drummer to drummer. That was fun for me. What a blessing. And I appreciate my brother so much. And Alfie, thank you so much for blessing us and, you know, and hooking it up for me. Thank you, brother. God bless you. Anyway, any old way, guys. So we got about another 42 minutes left in the show. I am back in the studio. We are back. And man, oh, man, I'm going crazy around here. But I'm happy to be back. You know, it's a good crazy. So getting ready for the new season as well. Greg's been posting the flyer that he's created for us. Thank you, Greg. We're getting ready for a whole new thing. Hopefully we can do the YouTube thing. I want you to be able to see these people that we're interviewing. How can that would be great. Not necessarily me because I'm tore up. But my guests, they look so nice. They know how to carry themselves. And then, no, I'm okay. I do okay. I just got to comb my hair. You know, when I'm just on the radio, most radio people, they just get on and they just go at it just the way that they are. They're not worried about people seeing them, and they just act crazy and say crazy things and drink and eat and talk and that. But now, you know, with the cameras, like, you got to discipline yourself, sir. So we look forward to that anyway. And tomorrow, Throwback Thursday, where we throw it back. We're going to go back to where Keith came from. Going right back there. The sound of Philadelphia, Motown, Solar, all those stacks, all those old school labels. We're playing your music because we love it. It really blessed us. And we're going to have a good time with it. And so tune in tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we're just going to have a good time. Today we are celebrating indie artists, blues, and all that jazz here on Solar Records Radio. This is your boy, Wardell Potts Jr. And Julio is another artist that is an indie artist that I want to play you. We just heard JoJo from the Mary Jane Girls doing her solo thing, JoJo with My Favorite Things. Blessings, JoJo. Much love to you, sweetheart. Hope you are doing well. And send me some more music. Send me some more music, JoJo. All right, guys. So check this song. It's called Color of Love. Listen to the words. Beautiful song. God bless you. And thanks again for tuning in. 40 minutes left in the show. Let's go.
bring, bursting like a dream in your eyes.
I really love you, yeah.
She's gonna get you.
So you don't have a receipt of your past. to prove.
You got to show me.
Do I love you? I'll tell you no less. How deep is the ocean?
would I cry? How deep is the ocean?
Sharon Klein right there, and just good music here on Solar Records Radio. As we're closing out this evening with you guys, we thank you so much for tuning in and hanging out with us. Much love, and you take care. Tune in tomorrow, Solar Records Radio at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we will have Throwback Thursday doing this thing. So come hang out. Thank you again for hanging out with us today. Much love to all you guys. We appreciate you, love you, and appreciate everything that you do. Please tell a friend about Solar Records Radio. We do appreciate that as well. All right, guys. Good night. God bless. We're going to leave you with a little Stanley Clark. Thank you.
walking in to love.
In 1973, the year I was born, an album was given to the world, performed and written by one of the greatest artists to ever live. The album, Extensions of a Man. The artist, Mr. Donny Hathaway. The song I'm about to sing is a song that's close to my heart. The lyrics were written for Donny by a friend of his, Edward Howard, due to the things that he was going through. And even more now today, I believe that this song rings true. My brother, my sister.